Again, this is Brother Jackson, and we're looking at we're understanding the biblical calendar. We're going to do a summary based on the canonized Bible alone. We're not going to look into the withheld scriptures. In the next presentation, I'll do that, and I'm certain when Brother Richard does his presentation in the near future, we will get that type of information as well. So let's begin. So the appointed times of Elohim are important times for his communities to assemble in his name and presence for specific reasons. He will be present at his appointed times and commands us to be present at those exact times. He gave us a schedule of the appointments recorded by his prophets, which manifest by the luminaries. Yet the recognized religious establishment, although possessing the records, misrepresent the divine calendar. Some propagated that it is a lunar calendar. Others thought that it is a lunar solar calendar, while others rendered it strictly as a solar calendar. Today, these various ideas are said to have stemmed from various sects of Judaism, i.e., Pharisaical, Sadduceo, Essenes, Qumrans, and a host of others, including Herodians. So what we are left with is an establishment of contradicting calendar views. But we are to speak one thing, brethren. If we are to be of the congregation that is in Elohim's hand, that is in Yeshua's hands, we must adhere to one thing. And if we have his spirit in us, or at least with us, guiding us, we will be able to speak one thing, to do one thing in this, in love and peace and all assurance. That's the goal of these presentations, to get us to share an understanding of what the calendar is about, to from the Bible first, and then from the hidden scriptures secondly, and then thirdly, we will try to see how the various methods of calendars, how they work, and there from there choose among these by through prayer and sincerity of heart the best of these calendars in prayer and choose one. And we will talk about the choosing process, which is strictly based on scripture, towards the end of our presentations. So let's continue. So to date, many are propagating more misconceptions by teaching various calendar ideas as the biblical calendar without empirical or verifiable proof. Despite this confusion, we know for sure that Elohim expects his people to assemble on the right times and proclaim the right times, Leviticus 23. He will teach us if we diligently do what he expects of us in matters of controversy. Again, matters of controversy, not between his congregation and the world, but controversy in the midst of his congregation, where there's a difference of understanding or a lack of understanding. We must do it as he says. So through the prophets, apostles, and especially through his uniquely born son, he gave us principles. The apostles, concurring with the prophet David, taught, quote, since we have the same spirit of faith as he had who wrote, quote, I believed and so I spoke. We too believe and so we speak. That's 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3. Okay. The Son said, truly, truly, I say to you, we speak of what we know and bear witness to what we have seen. Right? That's in John, the Gospel of John, chapter 3, verse 11. Again, these are the principles I'm saying. We must catch that. Did we catch what he expects of us? We are to teach what we truly know. And you've heard me say this again, not what we assume or think. We need to attest to what we've actually seen, not hearsay. No, knowing this, so considering that the Qumran community's version of the calendar, as I mentioned, the Qumran community, we don't need to be able to identify exactly who these people are, but there was a community near Damascus, near the Jordan, as our brother Richard clarified last week during the Bible's discussion on Sunday night, that the Qumran community was near Damascus, near the Jordan, close in the area where John the Baptizer, the Immerser, was preaching and baptizing. So their version of the calendar, as found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, is a luminary calendar, and many believe it's the correct one. But considering both positions, it is reasonable to agree that the rabbinical calendar is wrong as observed, while we still don't have definitive proof that the Dead Sea Scroll calendar is strictly solar or even the correct one. Many believe it's correct, but we need the definitive proof. So therefore, we who are devoted to Elohim and his purposes can't subscribe to any calendar without unequivocal proof that it is correct. There's no room for guessing. To date, I've not heard or read any calendar information that fully matched the biblical or Dead Sea Scroll text. The following are his appointments as specified in his word and by corresponding luminary manifestations. Let me just skip down a little bit in my head. Let me skip some things. So per the Bible, the Eternal clearly established a timekeeping system that is regulated by the luminaries, plural, by the luminaries' phases and position in relation to the earth. He commands that we seek him always, especially in the morning and evening. So that's the first appointed time, the every day, morning and evening, and the weekly Sabbaths, the head of month convocations, the yearly holy days, the year of release, and the year of Jubilee. All these were initially established on a phase and or position of the luminaries. That's how these appointed times were all set. They were not just arbitrarily set. They were set by motion of the luminaries as Elohim commands. So the first day was established by the first light, as our brother read earlier in Genesis chapter 1. It was that first light, on the fourth day, it was later continued by the sun. So per the Bible, the first Sabbath was established in the first seventh daylight, the first year by the first vernal equinox, the Aviv. When the Aviv begins with a full moon phase and the constellations in their right places. These are all to be looked at later on, but these are the principles of how the calendar is based. All the monthly, seasonal, and yearly appointments were set by combinations of luminary event, all three types, the sun, moon, and stars, not just one or the other. They all play a role. And it's not for us to guess, it's up for us to find out what those roles actually are. So let's scroll down a little bit. Okay, so let's look at a little bit more of the appointed times, okay? So by the testimony of the Bible, the true calendar must be one that is in sync with the luminaries, not just the moon or the sun. It's the moon, again, the sun, moon, and stars. Consider how the following appointments are based on the luminaries. Let's look at the day. The day is a cycle of sunrise, evening, night to dawn. That's the cycle you will see that's in Genesis chapter 1. In this cycle, two sacrifices were offered, one at dawn and the second at evening, perpetually every day until the destruction of the temple. Today we stop to pray to him at these times. The week, number two, the week. The week cycle consisting of 7 days is I'm sorry, the cycle, the week is a cycle consisting of 7 days. In this cycle, a Sabbath is scheduled every seventh day from sunrise to sunset. As he set the example, today we labor to do good for 6 days and rest to focus on him and his goodness on the Sabbath day. The month is a solar cycle of 30 days, not lunar as people purport. And again, we're saying these facts and we will look at them as we go on, but I just want you to keep that in mind. The month is a solar cycle of 30 days. There are 12 months per scripture. There are convocations on the head of each sets of months. And we'll look, as we look at the PDF that I sent, we will look at the sets of months and where the heads are. Today, we continue to try to praise and thank Elohim on the head of each new month. Four, the renewing seasons, cycle of renewals, which begin in the what's recalled commonly the vernal equinox or the Aviv or spring, being the first cycle. Then the next is the summer solstice. And the third is the vernal, or I'm sorry, the autumnal equinox or the fall equinox. And the fourth is the winter solstice. These are the four seasons that the calendar is also based on, that the calendar must accommodate. Each season is approximately 91 days long, and together they divide the 12 months into four quarters of months. There are seven annual holy days. The first set of holy days begins on the first month in spring, and the first set are held in spring, and the second set of holy days are in the seventh month of the fall. So today we are striving to keep these appointments at the proper time. This is again the purpose of this presentation. So the year is 364 days. Okay? 4 times 91 is 364 days. So the cycle of 364 days, which begins in spring and ends in winter, is one complete cycle of renewing seasons. Every year has a total of only 50 weekly Sabbaths. Each year will only have 52 weekly Sabbaths, and 7 yearly vernal and autumnal holy days, which we are learning about and to keep at their proper times. We're almost done with this, the cycle, then we'll get into some biblical details. So then there's the year of release, as mentioned. The year of release is a cycle of 7 years that restarts every eighth year. Sowing and harvesting are completely suspended on the seventh year of the cycle, as specified in the scriptures, probably regulated by the octaetires, where the moon will be in the same phase and approximate position every 8 years. Every eighth year could be when the cycle would reboot. Presently, we are trying to determine this exactly as well. And the last cycle is the year of Jubilee, the Yovlim. The Yovlim is a cycle of 50 years. It's a set of 7 years of release. So it's 7 times 7 years plus one more year. So freedom is proclaimed in the seventh month on the Day of Atonement of the 50th year, as specified in the scriptures. Okay, so probably 50 years regulated along a series of multiple octaetires or octaetorides. Okay, so that's the cycle. This is what the calendar must accommodate. It must accommodate the day. It must prep properly accommodate the day, the week, month, the renewing seasons, the yearly cycle, the year of release, and the year of Jubilee. Okay, so now let's look at the calendar for a moment. Hopefully you were able to open the PDF that I sent you. It will show you, it has on a single page, one full year of what the calendar looks like. Okay. I would encourage you, if you can, to look at your email if you haven't, and open that file, especially if you're not familiar with it. If you're familiar with it, it's okay. But if you're not, please take a look at the calendar PDF that I sent you. So on the calendar, you will see that, let's look at, it says first year. Where it says DDS calendar, this is as confirmed by the Dead Sea Scrolls and by the scriptures. I'm mentioning the Dead Sea Scroll, but we're not going to go through the Dead Sea Scroll references. But I'm saying that the Dead Sea Scroll shows the same calendar. But we're going to see in the scriptures why it is correct, why this format, why this arrangement of days and dates are correct. Here's what I'm saying. Not that the Dead Sea Scroll calendar looked exactly in this format, this neat format, but the days and dates were the same. And here's what I mean. So on the first row, we see the days of the week. We see days 1 through 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then below, we see the month. It says month 1, and it begins in spring, or Aviv. If you notice, on day 4 is when the year and seasons begin. It does not begin on the first day of the week. And I'm making these points, and then I will go back, and so it does not begin on the first day of the week. So let's take a look at Genesis chapter 1, which my brother read earlier, so you could see why. It begins like this in chapter 1. We're not going to read the entire all the verses my brother read earlier, but we will read maybe verses 1 through 3 and then focus on verse 14. So it says, in the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. When was the heavens and in the earth created? On day 1? Some people would assume that, no, not on day 1. In the beginning, Elohim, it was in the beginning that Elohim created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. That was the condition. When was the earth created? When were the heavens and the earth created? In the beginning. What was the condition of the earth? The earth was without form, void, covered with darkness. And then we read that the spirit of Elohim was hovering over the face of the waters. And Elohim said, let there be light, and there was light. This is not a created light. We cannot go into this detail now, but I want you to keep it. This is not a created light. This is light that emanates from his son. And it's very clear in John chapter 1. If you read the Gospel of John chapter 1 and some other texts, you will see that that light was the light of Yeshua. Okay? Let's keep going. And so he said, let there be light, and there was light. And Elohim saw that the light was good. And Elohim separated the light from the darkness. And Elohim called the light day. That's when the first day came into being, after the heavens and earth were created. A day can't be created. The first day can't be created on the first day because it didn't exist yet. It was created at a time when there was no sun, no light. The putting forth of the light was the start of the day. Okay? And Elohim saw that the light was good, and Elohim separated the light from the darkness. Elohim called the light day. That's when the day starts with the light. And the darkness was changed, and he called the darkness Lila, because now the darkness has bits of light in it. That's why it's called Lila. And there was evening and there was morning, a complete cycle. So the day consisted of the coming of the light, which started the day, and It transformed light, then the night into, and gave us evening, then night, and then dawn, which is a full cycle. Now, verse 6 is important. People sometimes miss that, and that's why my brother Phillips was emphasizing this, that Elohim said, let there be an expanse, a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters. Okay? This firmament is not what is not what we read about before. In verse 1, it says, in the beginning, Elohim created the heavens. This firmament is not the heavens. We have to keep that in mind. This is a firmament that's over the earth. Okay? It's over the earth. It's separate from where it says in the beginning, Elohim created the heavens, because he created the heavens first and then created the earth. But this expanse or firmament was created on what day? On day two. On the second day, after light brought in, it was created on the second day, this firmament. Okay, so let's jump now to verse 14, which is also what our calendar is based on. Oh, one more comment. If you notice how the writer writes, he didn't say on the first day Elohim said, let there be light. Okay? Notice he did not say that. Rather, he explains the events that brought a that 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 brought about the first day, where he says, let there be light. And you will see the same thing. He doesn't say on the second day, he doesn't say on the second day, let there be an expanse. He explains everything first and then says, these things happened on the second day. And that's how the and that's the art or the craft used as the writer is writing throughout all 6 days of creation. He explains what was done and then tells you the day on which they were done. So it's unfolding. It's unfolding. It's an unfolding process. So verse 14 now, where we that our calendar is also based on, says, and let there be light in the expanse. And when we jump down to verse 19, and there was evening and there was morning the fourth day. So these lights, these luminaries, Orim, were created on the fourth day. They were not placed in the heavens that you find in verse 1. They were placed in the expanse. That's in the firmament that's above, that separates the earth from the rest of creation. It says in verse 14, and Elohim said, let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night. And let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth. And it was so. So he placed the lights in that expanse that he made on the second, I'm sorry, on the, no, the expanse that he made on the second day. So you see, it's not the heavens of heavens he's talking about that you're reading about in verse 1. This is the what we would call the sky or the atmosphere, as people might describe it, over specifically over the earth. And so the sun, the moon, and the stars were placed in that expanse. And that's why I said we have to understand what scripture says so we can believe rightly. Okay? And let them be four lights. Now listen, if you notice, Elohim has given us when each day started, when everything started. Every single, for each day, there's a specific creation that he makes manifest and tells us about. So here it says, let these lights in verse 14, the bottom part of verse 14 says, and let them be for signs, one for otim, otot, which means signs, and for seasons, moedim, and for days, yamim, and for years. I forgot how to say years in Hebrew. I apologize, but for years. So the signs in the heavens, the seasons, the days going forward have started on the fourth day, not on day one. The first day started in the beginning, but the year, the seasons and the signs began on the fourth day of the week. So when you look at the calendar, that's why the year, when you look at in the month of spring, why the first day starts on the fourth day of the week, not in day one of the week. It starts on the fourth day because that's when those concepts, that's when Elohim enacted those principles of signs, seasons, and days and years. Okay? And going forward here, he's not creating new days. That's why it's there for days. It's set in motion now by the creation. At first, it was set by the light that came from him. Now it's set in motion by things he has created, the luminaries. So it's set in motion for a cycle, continuous cycle. Verse 16, and Elohim made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night and the stars. Verse 17, and Elohim set them in the expanse of the heavens. Remember what I said? He put them in the expanse of the heavens, right? That's what was done on day two. That expanse was made on day two, and that's where he put those things. On the fourth day in the expanse. And Elohim set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And Elohim saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning. A full cycle, beginning with the day, ending with the dawn to start the next day. So that's why we start the year on the fourth day. So when you look at the calendar PDF, it shows you that the first Sabbath happened on the fourth day of the month. If you look at it, the fourth day of the month, the first fourth day of the month landed on a Sabbath. And you could see that the next Sabbath was on the 11th, the next Sabbath was on the 18th, and the next Sabbath was on the 25th. This is not guessing work. This is putting the facts together. And we will see more and more evidence why this arrangement of starting the year on the fourth month is so. So it's 30 days. A month is a count of 30 days. You will see that in the book of Genesis when Jacob goes to find Laban, right? To find a wife and so on. So you will see that a set of 30 days is a month. It's not identified by any luminary really. But it's just 30 days. But days are established by the sun, not the moon or any other. It's the sun that establish days. So when you start the year, all you need to do to know what the first month looked like is to outline the 7-day week, days 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Below that, just put number 1 under the fourth day. And then wrap 30 days around 7 days from that point on, and that's exactly what the month, how the relationship of the days of the month. Okay, so it begins on the fourth day. The first month begins on the fourth day of the week and ends on the 30th day of the week. Now, if you scroll down, you will see that the first month, the fourth month, the seventh month, and the tenth month all look the same. They all look the same. And if you look at the second month, The fifth month, the eighth month, and the 11th month, they all look the same. The second month will always start on the sixth day of the week. So will the fifth month, so will the eighth month, so will the 11th month. And lastly, the third month, sixth month, 9 month, and 12 months, they also look the same. There's a pattern, okay? There's a pattern, in other words. And they all start on the first day of the week. The third, sixth, ninth, and 12th month start on the first day of the week. And they end, and it ends on the second day of the week, with one additional day for the transitioning of the seasons. That's what that, we put 31 so it's not confusing, but it's really a one. It's an additional day. That's not part of the month at all. Just like you have, daytime and nighttime. In between nighttime, we have the evening, which is neither day nor night, right? And in the, and at the end of the night, we have the dawn that is neither night nor day. It's their intermediary. They're in between the actual days. So this, so the 31 days that you see here on the third, sixth, ninth, and 12th months are in between days where the seasons transition. When we understand what the luminaries are doing, then we can see perfectly why that is so. Because the sun, in our view, as understood, moves from one end, from the middle, which is spring, then it moves to the extreme, then it moves to the fall. I'm sorry, then it moves to the summer and extreme heat, and then it goes back to the middle, which becomes the fall, then it heads back, then it heads towards winter, which is another extreme, which is the solstice. So the spring and fall, are equinoxes, while the summer and winter are solstices. Spring and fall are in the middle. Summer and winter are at the extreme. And so when it goes back, when it's shifting from one season to another, you put an extra day to account for that movement. Okay, so you have this. Now let's look at some additional scripture. So now I've said, based on Genesis, this is what the calendar should look like. Okay, now let's take a look at why this is so. I'm not going to verify the second month today, but I want to verify the first month. And if we have time, we'll try to verify the second month. So let's go to the Gospels, and you will see this. I'll tell you we're going to turn to, oh, no, before I do that, let's identify the holy days for you on here, okay? Before, because you need to see where they are so that when you see them in the Gospels, you'll know why they're there. Let's turn to Leviticus chapter 23. Briefly, we're not going to read the whole thing, but we're going to look at the dates and look at your calendar too, if you can. Have the calendar in front of you. If you don't have the calendar, if you couldn't open the file, just write out 7 days or pick a calendar where the month starts on the first day. That it will pretty much work out the same way. So in Leviticus chapter on the fourth day, sorry. In Leviticus chapter 3, verses 1, Elohim says, "The Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, these are the appointed feasts." These are the appointed the Moedim, the appointed times of the Eternal, "that you shall proclaim as holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts." Every single one of them are his feasts. There's none of them that's to be excluded here. There are some congregations they exclude, but that's error. Elohim says, "These are my holy convocations. They are my appointed feasts." There's no exclusion. So all of us on the phone, we know that the Sabbath, as read in verse 3, 6 days shall you labor be done, but the seventh day is the Shabbat. of Elohim, is the Shabbat of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the eternal in all your dwelling places. That no matter where you live, it is to be observed. Okay? So we look at our calendar, we see the week, the days of the week, and I have it in green and yellow as the Sabbath. And we see for the first month, the first Sabbath for the first month will always be on the fourth day. The second Sabbath the second Sabbath will be on the 11th, the third on the 18th, and the 25th on, and the fourth on the 25th day of the month. Now, let me hence too, when I say first month is not, we're not talking about January, just to be sure. We're talking about the month of Aviv, the month of Aviv, which is spring. Now, the first month is the head of the months. Remember earlier, I read the head of the months, or the Rosh Chodesh. The first month of each season is the head of months. Is the head of months. This is the appointed time that where we're supposed to gather each month. It's not. It doesn't necessarily mean that every single month for all 12 months, but each four of the season that starts the season. So you could see in spring, the first month is the first Chod Chodesh. In summer, it's the fourth month. In autumn, it's the seventh month. And in winter, it's the 10th month. And somewhere in scripture, you read about the fast of the first month, fast of the fourth month, fast of the seventh month that most of us are familiar, and the 10th month. That's why all the fasts are on those particular head of months. Because all the fasts must be on the 10th day of the month. But we'll take a look at that. So that's the Sabbath. So that's the weekly Sabbath. And then we have Passover in verse 4. When is Passover? These are my appointed feasts of the eternal, the set apart convocations which you shall proclaim at the time appointed for them. So in the first month, you see why Passover is kept in the first month, where it's going to be? Look, in the first month on the 14th day, look at the 14th day where it lands. Look at the dynamic of the day and of the day of the week and the day of the month. Okay? The 14th lands on the third day of the week, or what we call Tuesday. That's the third day of the week, right? So the 14th, so Passover, according to this calendar, will always be on the third day of the week, as we say here, on a Wednesday. So that's why it says here, in the first month of the 14th day of the month at twilight, so at evening. So when the sun is before the sun sets, between the evenings is like from 12 to 6. And we'll investigate those facts later on, but I just let you know where between the evening, between 12 and 6, right? That's between the evenings. So I'm sorry, that's the evening. Let me verify. The evening starts from what we would call noon until 6. Between the evening would be the ninth hour, or around 3 p.m., which is, interestingly, when Messiah was crucified, right? That's the time of the evening sacrifice, not just the Passover sacrifice. Remember, there's a morning and evening sacrifice. And these are the times that these sacrifices would be done. So at twilight, or between the evening, is the eternal Passover. So that's the Passover, strictly. Then we have on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened Bread for 7 days, right? So look at the calendar. So the days of Unleavened Bread will always start on the fourth day or Wednesday, and the feast will end on the 21st. That's when the feast will end. So it's a 7-day feast, beginning from the 15th and ends on the 21st. This is not strictly about the feast, so I'm not going to go into the details. In the near future, we can look at each feast and look at the details. But I'm just letting you know the reason I'm saying these, because in the New Testament, we find that our Messiah was arrested and put to death around that's the season. So let's see if it will match. Let's see if the information will match what's on this calendar. If it matches, then it's going to be one proof, or as our brother Richard would say, one witness as of why this the dynamics, the arrangement where the dates fall, that the dates will always fall on the same day of the week. It's not like our Gregorian calendar where the dates can fall on any time. No, the dates will always fall on the same time of the week, day of the week. So let's go to the New Testament now. We're going to look at just the points where Messiah was arrested and when he, and throughout. We're not going to read the whole things because we wouldn't have enough time. All right. So let's go to Matthew chapter 20. Six. Okay. It says, verse 17. Now on the first day of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yeshua saying, "Where will you have us prepare for you to eat the Passover?" Now, just quick note. The first day of unleavened bread is not the feast of unleavened bread. The first day of unleavened bread is another day for the 14th. There's a difference between feast and day of, that is the day that they prepare the Passover. And that's why they're asking, where will you have us prepare you for you to eat the Passover? Some people think this is some sort of error. It's no error. It's absolutely correct and perfectly accurate. Here, this is not the 15th. This is during the daytime. They're asking him, where will you prepare for us to eat the Passover? Not to eat some meal, some other meal, as others might say. I'm sticking strictly with the Bible. It is to eat the Passover. So he says in verse 18, and what date does the Passover fall? It falls on the 14th of the first month of the first biblical month of Aviv, right? It falls on the Hodesh, on that first month. So he says in verse 18, go into the city to a certain man and say to him, the teacher says, my time is at hand and I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples. So this is not some other meal he was eating. He was eating the Passover according to Matthew. So he's eating the Passover. You could read this on your own. He establishes the supper. So we know he goes out. In verse 36, then Yeshua went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here while I go and pray. What night is this? This is the night of the 14th, after they ate the Passover meal. Right? He went out. And he prayed, and you know what happened. And then they came. So verse 47, while he was still speaking, Judas came, one of the 12, and with him a great crowd with swords and clubs from the chief priests and the elders of the people. So he was arrested that night. We all know the account, so I'm not going to go through it. But so all this was happening on the night of the 14th. Look at your calendar. Look at the calendar that we've made. The 14th. If he was arrested on the 14th, right? And the common belief, as I've mentioned, is that he was crucified the next day and he rose and he showed himself alive by that first day of the week. That's the common belief. Let's stick to that belief for a moment. There are other beliefs, but they all work the same way. Just they believe Yeshua, some believe Yeshua rose from the dead on exactly Sunday morning. early Sunday morning. Some believe he rose from the dead. Let's see. After the Sabbath in the evening, and some even more recently, some believe that he was some people believe he was actually risen Saturday morning. But this is not what this discussion. I'm just making the point that whichever one you believe, the calendar still will work. I want to stick for now with the idea that Yeshua was crucified on the day after and rose on the following first day of the week. So if he was arrested, which he was definitely arrested on the 14th, the night of the 14th. We know that because he told his disciple, prepare the Passover. It is against the law to prepare the Passover at any other time than prescribed in the scriptures. You could prepare it. It has to be always on the 14th, whether it's on the first month, or if for some reason you miss it, you have to do it on the 14th of the second month. That's it. After that, you have two chances. After that, you miss the Passover and would incur a great sin if you would do that, right? So the Passover is on the 14th. He ate the Passover. He was arrested, taken away. Let's follow the common scenario. So he was tried and he was crucified. Let's assume, and I say assume, here's why I say assume. It's not because I don't know. It's because I don't really agree with that scenario. Okay, but that's what's commonly expected. And in the future, I will show you why in the Bible, when you follow the dates, that it's not what people commonly believe, but will work out perfectly and magnify the Passover celebration even more when we see what the Bible says actually happened in light of the calendar dates. But that's for another time. Let's work with this because either way it works. And that's why I want to work with that method to avoid any confusion. So if Yeshua spent 3 days and three nights in the tomb, and let's see, and verse 20, and we know he was crucified sometime in the, Matthew's account shows us he was crucified in the morning. And here's why. You could see that he was crucified in the morning. So let's see. I'm sorry. Verses 32 of chapter 27. And as they went out, they found a man of Cyrene, Simon by name. They compelled this man to carry his cross or stake. Right. So they compelled him. So verse 34. When they came to the place, which means place of the skull, Golgotha, the place of the skull, they offered him their wine to drink, mixed with gall. But when he tasted it, he would not drink it. And when they had crucified him, they divided his garment. So he's crucified, right? And now, verse 45, like after several things happen, verse 5, we read about the sixth hour. The sixth hour is about 12 noon. In the afternoon. So he was crucified in the morning, in other words. So it shows you definitely he was crucified in the morning, not in the afternoon. He was already crucified in the sixth hour, according to verse 45. Now from the sixth hour, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. You understand? That's when the darkness started. At high noon, when it should be the brightest light, it was dark. So Yeshua, according to Matthew, was crucified in the morning. And the resurrection happened according to all common translations, ancient Bible translations, historians, that Yeshua was seen alive on the first day of the week. To see if this works, let's look at the week of the 14th on our calendar. And let's look at the first day of the week from the 14th. The first fourth day of the week during Passover is the 19th. So if we go back 3 days and three nights, we would find that he would have been crucified on the 15th, on the Wednesday. So this works. So it shows you that when Yeshua was crucified, because we know the scripture says he was risen on the
on he was shown at shown alive. I'm gonna say this now because I don't want to create controversy. He was manifest alive. They found him alive on the first day of the week. They saw him. So if you count 3 days and three nights backwards, you will find out that he was crucified on that the fourth day will land on the 15th. That you will start, that you will conclude your count of days and nights on the 15th, or on that Wednesday or fourth day of the week. And this testament is throughout the scripture. Now, again, some believe, like I said, he was risen exactly on Sunday morning. Some believe he was risen on the 18th, which would have been the evening of the Sabbath. And others believe he was also risen on the 18th, but in the dawn, in the morning, just before Sabbath. But, yeah, just, no, just before Sabbath. Some believe he was risen on the Sabbath, just before the Sabbath begins. So either method you use, if you look at this calendar, you will see if you count 3 days and three nights, it will work. Because those who believe he was risen on a Sabbath, nor you would usually say he was actually he didn't eat the Passover, but ate another meal on the 13th or so. So that's what's commonly taught. But I want to stick with the facts that's been preserved for us for years, and that's been trusted. Okay? So let's look at, so we know, so I said Matthew shows us he was crucified in the morning. Let's look, I'm not going to read the whole thing in Mark, but let's look at Mark. Let's look at the book of Mark for a minute. Let's look at Mark's account on this. I want to show you that the days recorded in the New Testament, few thousand years afterwards, were the same days you'll find that were recorded in Genesis. Let's go to Mark chapter 14. Chapter 14, verse 12. Let's look at the second apostolic witness that Elohim has preserved for us for generation. It says, "And on the first day of unleavened bread," notice that same language. Do you think the apostles didn't know what they were talking about? Again, the first day of unleavened bread. The day of unleavened bread here is the 14th. It is what they call the daytime part of the 14th, where you had to get all the leaven out of your house. That's why it's called the day of unleavened bread. We got to get rid of all the chametz, get rid of all the leaven out of our house before sunset. Right? That's why it's called the day. You don't do that on the feast of unleavened bread. It has to be already done. Because if you look at the Exodus account, they didn't their bread was already unleavened. They had no time to put leaven in it. So let's look at the scenario. So on the first day of unleavened bread, what happened? His disciples said to him, when they sat again, see, when they sacrificed the lambs. It's on the day, on that day. You don't do it in the dark. You eat it in the dark. You don't eat the Passover in the night, in the day. You eat it in the dark at night, but you slay it while it's plenty of light in the mid between the evenings. So where will you have us go to prepare for you to eat the Passover? Explaining his thought. And he sent two of them. Again, it's very clear what's going on here. And he will show you a large upper room, verse 15, furnished and ready there, prepare for you. Some believe he didn't eat the Passover. No, there prepare for us. He includes himself. And verse 16, and the disciples set out and went to the city and found it just as he had told them, and they prepared plain bread. No, they prepared the Passover. There's no argument. We would have to disqualify the scriptures to come up with Yeshua didn't have a Passover meal. This is what's preserved for us in the scriptures. And so prepared for us the Passover. Verse 17, and when it was evening, he came with the 12 And as they were reclining at table and eating, as is customary, as found in the law, it's implied that now it's a celebration of freedom. We're relaxed. We're not stressed anymore. We're not ready to run out the house anymore. We're relaxed. We're reclining. We're taking our time. We're enjoying the freedom that Elohim has given us through the Passover. So they're reclining and eating. Yeshua said, truly, truly, I say unto you, one of you will betray me. And with this scenario, when we read the account of John, even though John doesn't give us the specifics of the Passover, we know that these words were said during the Passover meal. So John's record is the same record. He just did not mention the Passover meal. It's not another meal. Okay, so let's, and the resurrection scenario is the same. Is the same, except we have more clear information on when Messiah was crucified. Messiah was crucified in the around 9 a.m. I believe it's the third hour. Let me just find that. Verse in Matthew chapter 15, verse 24, and they crucified him and divided his garments among them, casting lots for them to decide what each should take. And what time was it? And it was the third hour when they crucified him. So he was crucified in the morning, early in the morning, around 9 a.m. That's around the time of the morning sacrifice. Okay, so we have to try to conclude this. I hope you could see the point I'm making. I know I'm going about this a long way, but it's very important that we have confidence of what the calendar looks like. Let's look at Luke quickly. Third testimony of Luke chapter 22. And this is where people get confused. Now, Luke says, now the feast of unleavened bread drew near, which is called the Passover. Notice, it doesn't say on the feast of unleavened bread. It says, now the feast of unleavened bread drew near, which is what Yeshua had said to them before. He says, in 2 days will be the feast, and the Son of Man will be delivered to be, you know, crucified, put to death. So here, Luke is alluding to the entire feast. The feast itself, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, drew near. And the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to put him to death, for they feared the people. But let's look at verse 7 of Luke. Look at the language. Look to show that the writer knows what he knows the difference. Verse 7 says, and the day of unleavened bread came, on which the Passover lamb had to be what? Had to be sacrificed. On the Yom, on the morning. That's when you prepared the Passover. So Yeshua sent Peter and John saying, go and prepare the Passover for us. That we may eat it. He included himself again. So, brethren, so this is another subject because there is so much unnecessary controversy up about this when we look at the calendar and what happens. On the days, there's no contrary when we understand. So there's the day of unleavened bread, which is the daytime of the Passover before the Passover is eaten. And there's the feast of unleavened bread, which is the day after on the 15th of the month, which falls on the fourth day. So the Passover is always on the third day. You prepare for it on what we would call Tuesday morning. And by Tuesday night, you eat it. And by the next day that we would call the fourth day or Wednesday, we observe the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which is a Sabbath, as we read in Leviticus chapter 23. If there's anyone who's not familiar with the feast, review Leviticus chapter 23 and review Exodus. I believe around beginning, I think, where the first plague with the Passover, Elohim explains through Moses the holy days beginning from that time. So it was the Passover. Very clear. Okay? And when they went there, Verse 11, and tell the master of the house, the teacher says to you, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples? Okay, so what do we see here? So he was, again, arrested on the 14th, on the night of the 14th, and according to all the testimonies, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, he was seen alive on the first day of the week. He said he would be in the heart of the earth. He said that was the sign. They asked him for a sign. Give us a sign. He says, I will not give you any sign but the sign of Jonah. He says, the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth for 3 days and three nights. Not 1 day, not 2 day, 3 days and three nights. So we have to count backwards from the time he was seen alive, 3 days and three nights, and you will see that based on the Passover, that he was risen, that he was put to death on the fourth day of the week. He was put to death on the fourth day of the week, not the third day of the week. And he rose on, he was seen alive on the first day of the week. We'll do one more and then I will stop to take questions and answers. This time, oh, let's look at, did I do the resurrection? Yes, I did. Oh, and one more witness is the crucifixion itself was during the day. Because believe it or not, there are people that argue about that. You will see also that it was during the day he was crucified, not in the evening. Let's see that. Okay, verse 32 of chapter 23. Two others of Luke. Luke chapter 23, verses 32 says, two others who were criminals were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place that is called the skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Yeshua said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they cast lots to divide his garment. So he's crucified already. Let's see. Okay. And they're insulting him and saying all sorts of things against him. He's already crucified. They're making verse 9, 39, and so on. Now, verse 44. It was about the sixth hour, and there was darkness over the land until the ninth hour. Again, so now there's darkness while the sun's light failed and the curtain of the temple was torn. This didn't happen when he was crucified. This happened after he was, because he was crucified in the morning, not in the afternoon. Some of you are saying, I know that, and I appreciate, but there's some who believe he was actually crucified in the afternoon. But this goes, we have to throw away so many scriptural evidence for that. And I personally, in my conscience, could never do such a thing. So it was the sixth hour, that which is 12 noon, that the temple was rent and so on, because he was already crucified in the morning. Now let's look at for one interesting, so this was the account of Yeshua. Now, and John is the same, except John doesn't specifically say the Passover, but he does talk about being betrayed and so on. So even though he doesn't mention Passover, we know it's the same event. It's the same. It's during the Passover. It's the account of Passover that John is referring to. And the resurrection account, the same. The only interesting thing, though, for another study is, you know what, I'm not going to go there for today because I don't want to draw your attention away too much. So let's go to the book of Acts. Let's just do that for a minute. We're going to go through the book of Acts. I'll tell you where to turn. And then we'll conclude with that and I'll take questions. It's Acts chapter 20, verses 1 through 7. So go to Acts chapter 20, verses 1 through 7. And why in the world did Elohim provide all of these dates, all of this account? Why would he do that? Why would he do that? In verse 20, verses 1 through 7. Chapter 20, verses 1 through 7 will again show you that the calendar is correct. Let me just scroll down for my notes for a second. I just want to be concise as possible. We're going to read verse 7, then I'll verses 1 through 7, then I'll explain. But also have the calendar in front of you, okay? So you can mark this and see that the calendar is correct. Elohim does not give us information for no reason. Let's read it and you'll see why I'm saying this. So the 20th, Acts chapter 20, verses 1 to 7. After the uproar ceased, Paul sent for the disciples, and after encouraging them, he said farewell and departed for Macedonia. When he had gone through those regions and had given them much encouragement, he came to Greece. There he spent 3 months, and when a plot was made against him by the Jews as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. Sopater of Berea, the son of Pyrrhus from Berea, accompanied him, and of the Thessalonians, Aristarchus and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe. Gaius is an important name to keep in mind, not for the calendar, but all these names, there's a reason why they're there, because in the other scriptures, the hidden scriptures, you have a lot of information about them. That's another point. And Timothy and the Asians and Tychicus and Trophimus, these went on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. Here's what gets interesting. Pay close attention. But we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. Look at your calendar. When is the last day of unleavened bread? It is the 21st. And what day is the 21st? It's a Tuesday. It's the third day. Look at my calendar here. Make sure I'm saying, yeah, the 21st is on the third day of the week, right? So he starts sailing on the 23rd day of the week, the day after the days of unleavened bread. And in 5 days, so 5 days from the 21st, we came to them at Troas, where we stayed for 7 days. So 7 plus 5 is 12, right? We stay there for 7 days. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, we stop here. So now we have another point of reference. On the first day of the week, what week? The week of the 7 days. So now let's look at our calendar and let's see if this will work out right. Let me just say a little bit of let me explain a little bit more, because I understand and I have to make sure you understand what I'm trying to say, and then we'll try to conclude. So the account of dates and days involved the Apostle Paul's journey to Troas, as recorded in Acts chapter 20, is consistent with that of the Old Testament and those mentioned in connection with the Messiah. These men went on ahead and waited for us at Troas. Let's see. I don't want to read the same thing. Okay, yeah. At Troas. So let me say, these men went on ahead and waited for us at Troas, but we sailed from Philippi after the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and 5 days later joined the others at Troas, where we stayed 7 days, and on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. So they sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, which would be the 22nd, because the last day of unleavened bread is the 21st, which is a Tuesday. So they sailed on what we would call a Wednesday, the 22nd, since the feast ends on the 21st day. 5 days later, being the 26th, they joined the others in Troas, where they abode for 7 days. So the 26th would have been what day? Okay, so they stayed there the 26th. Look at the calendar, as I'm saying, though, those dates, okay? So 5 days later, being the 26th, they joined the others in Troas, where they stood for 7 days. On the first day of the week, they assembled to eat. So from the day they sailed from Philippi to that first day of the week made it a total of 12 days. Now, by simply counting 12 days backwards from the first day of the week, we find that the day after the last day of the feast, which was the 22nd of Aviv, fell on the fourth day of the week. And that the last day of the feast itself, being the 21st day of Aviv, fell on the third day of the week, just as the calendar would, just as would be expected on the calendar. By simply continuing to count backwards from that point, we find that we find that Passover, which began on the 14th, fell on the fourth day of the week. And that the first day of Aviv fell on the fourth, also fell on the fourth day of the week. So wow, this is the same result obtained from the calendar data in what's called commonly called the Lord's Supper and the resurrection, and Genesis 1 and 2. Also, since that is the case for the first month, it logically follows that the dates of the second month fell on the same days of the second month described in Exodus 16, which we'll not cover today, but we'll cover next week. So let's take a look. So look at the model of the month. This is not just coincidence, but is rather consistent information given by the Eternal to be found and understood by those who fear and love Him enough to trust the Scriptures over unfounded doubts and flawed traditions of men. So, a quick review, then I'll take questions. So, looking at the calendar picture, the first month begins in spring. It begins on the fourth day of the first spring month, and it ends on the, and it is 30 days long and ends on the fifth day of that month. We find that information is based on the book of Genesis, that the years, days, and seasons were first established by Elohim when He placed the luminaries in the expanse that's over the earth. He put them there, and that's when seasons and daily cycles continued, became a cycle, and years. And with years, even though months are not mentioned, we know months to be mentioned later on are included in the years. Seasons, which were not fully defined, would later be defined. So that's where we get that consistency from Genesis. We saw it through the gospel accounts from the time Messiah was arrested on the night of Passover, and was crucified on a Wednesday. 3 days and three nights later, was found alive on the first day of the week. That's consistent. And we saw that the apostles with Paul, with their trip, that Elohim gave a specific time. Why do you think Elohim is giving us those dates? It's to instruct us. See, the hidden things are for those who are the disciples of Elohim. Some people look at things and don't ask questions, but the disciples always ask questions. Why are you telling me this, that they sailed after the days of unleavened bread? Why are you telling me that 12 days later was a first day of the week? Why are you saying this? Because He's giving us the information at the right time for us to recognize His calendar, because He knows the future. He knew the future from the beginning. He knew that there would be confusion. And Enoch talks a lot about that, as we'll look at that in the future. And so He made sure we had all the evidence we need to know that there is a calendar to seek after. So this model that you see here represents the arrangement of the dates and days of the first month. It always begins on the fourth day of the week, and will always, the 30th day will always end on the fifth day of the week. So I stop here.